I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Yesterday, President Obama nominated a corporate leader to take the helm of the troubled Department of Veterans Affairs, former Procter & Gamble CEO Robert McDonald. Obama called McDonald an expert at making organizations better, and if approved by the Senate, McDonald will have plenty to make better at the VA. The department was rocked by scandal this spring when revelations at the Phoenix VA hospital showed many vets enrolled as new patients waited months for services, with 40 even dying before they got care. That prompted a 50-state audit of VA facilities, including here in New Hampshire, with the results released a few weeks ago. The audit showed the Manchester VA in better shape compared to most other states, but still far from what many say our veterans deserve. Today in The Exchange, emerging from the VA scandal, where does veterans health care stand? Let's hear from you. If you've served in the armed forces, what's been your experience with the VA health system? And even if you're not a veteran, what changes do you think need to be made? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have three guests in studio. Tammy Krueger is here. She's director of the Manchester VA Medical Center. She's been in that position since March and has spent many years in the veterans healthcare system. And Tammy, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Colonel Paul Loisel, Mission Support Group Commander at the Pease Air National Guard Base. He served in Afghanistan in 2009 and formerly oversaw the Deployment Support Cycle Program, which provides services to military members and their families. And Colonel Loisel, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you.
And also with us, Howie Howe, a veteran service officer who works to advise the State Veterans Advisory Committee. He also coordinates New Hampshire's Help on the Home Front, a veterans advocacy group. He's a Vietnam veteran himself. And Howie Howe, it's good to meet you. Thank you also for being
here. Thank you very much.
Well, and Howie, I want to start with you, but hear from everybody. Just first, big news yesterday, President Obama picked somebody from the business sector to lead the VA. What do you think, Howie? What are your hopes for this new nominee?
Well, I think that it's a great selection. We've got somebody who definitely has management experience and knows how to try and coordinate a business organization. And technically, let's face it, the VA is a business, and it's in the business of providing health care to veterans. The big problem that I see is going to face Mr. McDonald is whether or not he's going to be able to adapt to a system where he really has no control over those who below him. As long as he doesn't have the power to hire and fire, he's basically curtailed in his efforts.
How do you feel about the fact that he doesn't have extensive military service or health care?
Well, he is a veteran.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't think you need to have 30 years of experience to understand the military or the needs of it, because the majority of the veterans that are out there seeking care in the VA system are not 20 years. Those people usually are TRICARE and, you know, other systems that have nothing to do with the VA system. So, I mean, you're talking with a guy that has the same experience as the majority of people that need to be served by the VA.
Love to hear from you, too, Paul Loisel. President Obama touted Mr. McDonald as a fix-it guy. What does he need to fix? And how big? I mean, we all know what he needs to fix, but how big a fix is it going to be?
I think there's a lot of challenges that we've got here, in not only in healthcare, but in Veterans Administration healthcare as well. But it is complicated. I mean, you know, I've worked in healthcare most of my career, both on the civilian sector as well as in the military. And we have a complicated system here in the United States. It's outstanding care. At the same time, there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of bureaucracy along with that. And that creates confusion and difficulty for folks actually accessing the care that they need. And so that's one of the biggest things I see is we have a lot of folks that are eligible for health care, especially veterans health care. But we find that not everybody finds the health care that they need or even signs up to begin with. So we need to figure that out, too, is making sure that the folks that are eligible actually sign up and get the care they need.
Well, and just clear something up for me, if you could, Colonel Loisel, before we go too much further. Why do we have a separate veterans' health care system. Why don't we just give veterans, you know, vouchers once they come home to access it at a private hospital or a private doctor's office?
I believe that the veteran has a unique set of needs and challenges that many we have found in the civilian sector simply don't really have a deep understanding or deep enough understanding of those issues, especially when you look at things like PTSD and TBI, traumatic brain injury. It's very difficult to treat those issues and even identify them in the first place. And so if you specialize in military medicine, it's going to be far easier for those folks then to try to figure out, you know, this complex series of problems versus somebody thrown in that just simply doesn't understand military culture or what this person may have gone through.
So how do you feel about proposals to farm out more of this care to the private system, given the troubles that we've seen in accessing care at the VA?
I think two sort of separate choices or two separate decisions. One, I think we need to ensure that the VA is taken care of and funded and resourced as fully as they need to make sure that the care that is needed and earned by our veterans is there for today and for tomorrow. But secondly, clearly in states, rural states in particular, we have parts of our state, for instance, that aren't terribly close to one of our VAs. And so we need to make sure that in those instances, folks don't have to travel very far in order to get the care they need. That means that I think local care is also very important. A piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, and Tammy, obviously I want to bring you into this because you're the new head of the Manchester VA Medical Center. Let's talk about what your next boss, whether it's Mr. McDonald or someone else, depending on whether the Senate confirms him, will have to do. Big picture first, please, Tammy. What did we learn earlier this spring from those revelations at the Phoenix VA about veterans waiting so long for care? And what's the big lesson there for the system?
Well, I think that it's important to recognize that the technology and the information systems is past its useful life, and that it highlighted that there certainly needs to be recognition and new systems to support not only scheduling but the technology to move forward. And I think that that was recently recognized and publicized through information that was shared this past week.
So partly it was outdated technology that just messed up the scheduling system that meant that these veterans were waiting for months?
The scheduling system, as I understand, was back in 1985.
Wow.
That we last received that. That was one version of that system. So we've been living with that technology since then. And we know that technology always needs to be refreshed. And so that certainly is an important decision moving forward. And I think that moving past performance requirements specific to weights, and I think that there will be future decisions such as that that will also be important related to performance metrics.
Yeah, and if you can just clarify that, Tammy, I know what you're talking about, but just to make clear for the audience what you're talking about there, that managers' performance was tied to making it look like veterans got care quickly when in fact they did not.
To be specific, there were expectations that there was a 14-day measure for us to measure the timeliness of access.
That was the standard you were supposed to meet.
And that was a measure in which that was the yardstick, if you will. And so that has been eliminated. And certainly we continue to measure our waits for a veteran to receive access to care. And so I think that there are opportunities moving forward.
A lot more questions for all of you. Let me also invite our listeners to join us, though. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're looking at where veterans' health care stands now in the months after this scandal that resulted in a national audit of the veterans' health care system. Join us with your comments, questions, concerns. If you served in the armed forces, what's been your experience with the VA system? Even if you're not a veteran, what observations do you have about this situation? What changes do you think might help? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Howie, as we look at big lessons, big picture from this whole scandal earlier this year, something that kept coming out is just the system is overburdened. We have all these veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan aging Vietnam veterans and that there's just not enough there for them. What have you seen?
Well, we also went on a big push to try and get a lot more claims approved, which also added to that system. Well, one of the things that that really needs to be taken into consideration is that the focus of the government in Washington, D.C. seems to be that leadership solves all problems. And really what it comes down to, it's the lack of resources at the lower end of the level. The reason we send so many veterans out of state in New Hampshire is because of the fact we don't have enough clinics to handle those. I mean, we know that from studies that Tammy's group has done, what those things are, what the problems are. I mean, ophthalmology is a good example. Ophthalmology can be done in Manchester, but only if they have the operating room open. It's been closed for 2 years. So
2 years, wow.
Yeah, well, going through a lot of things. One of the big problems, too, is the fact that most people don't realize how dependent the government is on interagency reaction and getting things done. Tammy can sit there all day long, and I'm not faulting Tammy at all. She could say, look, we need this, we need this, we need this. But the process to get it approved is absolutely absurd, and who gets to make those decisions is way beyond her. Most of the stuff that she has, like if she wants to add a wing on the building to add a new clinic, that's got to go through the GSA, then it's got to go through the lawyers, then it's got to... It takes 2 years to get the simplest thing approved.
Well, it has to be a budget line, right? A line in the budget that's approved by Congress.
The money's there. The money's in the system. The problem is it's staying at the top, and they're trying to decide where to put it without having the approval to use it at the bottom.
Here's the critique that I've heard, Paul Loisel, from a couple different places, and that is, you know, that the Veterans Administration was not properly funded for these wars to wind down and for all these people to come home. What do you think?
I think that's probably true. That was my gut anyway. As Howie said, and I think you did as well, I mean, we have all these Vietnam-era veterans coming into sort of retirement years, really putting a large burden on our healthcare system, the VA system in particular. And now we have coming off of two different wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, of which now the signature injuries, PTSD, TBI.
Complicated.
They're complicated, exactly. And they're not going to be solved today. Many of these symptoms and signs may only show up in the next 5 years. And so the demand is going to continue to accelerate. And yet we then created, I think, rule sets, i.e., you know, these waiting times or 14 days and such, that were very aggressive. And really, we didn't have the budgets necessary, perhaps, in order to really accommodate that.
All right. Coming up, we've talked about this national 50-state audit. We're going to dig into the New Hampshire audit, what those numbers show us about New Hampshire's veterans' health care. All that, plus your calls. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. The Exchange is coming to the North Country. Join Laura Kanoy and a panel of experts as they take your questions and discuss the state of the Main Street economies north of the Notches. The Exchange on the Road is at the Colonial Theater in Bethlehem, happening July 10th. Reserve your tickets today at nhpr.org. Mostly sunny and hot today with high temperatures upper 80s to lower 90s. Partly cloudy, humid tonight, lows mid-60s to the low 70s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Bellamy Fields Assisted Living in Dover. More information on geriatrics with a sense of humor online at bellamyfields.com. And Circus Mercus Traveling Youth Circus presenting its 2014 Big Top Tour, Anchors Away for Atlantis, July 5th and 6th in Hanover and July 15th and 16th in Swansea. Tickets at smercus.org. It's 9:20. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about veterans' health care. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us as we look at where veterans' health care stands now in the months after a scandal broke nationally and there was a 50-state audit of how veterans' health care is conducted in the states, including New Hampshire. Join us with your comments and questions, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Joining us now in studio is Brian Walston. He's NHPR's digital reporter. You can find links to Brian's recent reporting about the Manchester VA on our webpage at nhpr.org/exchange. Brian, thanks for taking time out for us this morning. We appreciate it.
Morning, Laura.
Well, we've been talking about this national audit. To give us a little more detail, Brian, if you could, on what was found about these wait times for new patients here in New Hampshire?
Well, the audit reported that there were about 118 vets from New Hampshire that waited 90 days or more for their first appointments, and that there were 98 vets who had enrolled for treatment in the last decade that have yet to see a physician in the network. And newly enrolled patients in Manchester waited almost 20 days on average to see a primary care physician. Now, these are the audit findings. Now, there is some discrepancy in these numbers. And the Tammy's assistant was good enough to forward me some explanation that they had gotten some clarification that these were prospective wait times and that the actual wait times that were recorded in Manchester were much less. And those numbers were, for all patients, it was 15 days. For primary care, it was a 9-day wait, as opposed to the 20-day wait that the audit had found. So, you know, the way it was explained to me, that there was no real explanation for this discrepancy, what the prospective wait times took into consideration, how they reached that conclusion. So I just will say that there was some difference in what the Manchester VA had been able to ascertain themselves and what the audit reported. There was some discrepancy in those numbers.
And Brian, just to be crystal clear, we're talking about new veterans enrolling in the system. Once
Correct.
People are in, they're waiting, you know, a day or two
right.
or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, so the problem is getting new folks into the system and
Correct.
That the wait times have been long nationally and maybe what the, not they could be here in New Hampshire as well.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and Brian, is this really, we've talked about the resource issues, we've talked about the wars and people coming back. Is this really a surprise or has this been brewing for some time?
Well, you know, I think some people would say that this was inevitable in some regard. I mean, if you just go back recently, 12, 15 years, you know, I think in 1995, and someone here might be able to correct me, this is that the goal was a 30-day wait for an appointment. And then a couple of years later, there was an audit that found that, you know, over 235,000 vets had been waiting 6 months or more for an appointment. This is going back to the George W. Bush administration. So these problems are happening and, you know, have been happening for years. There was an analysis done by Harvard in 2007 that found that, you know, the system was already overwhelmed by a lot of it was the returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts. And that if there wasn't some more resources provided, there was not going to be a way to provide high quality care in a timely fashion. So, I mean, that was 7 years ago. So today, if you fast forward, it's, you know, they're using Iraq and Afghanistan vets are using the services more than vets from other conflicts. You have the influx of the older Vietnam veterans. And the VA just has more patients than it can handle right now.
So it's the perfect storm,
right.
to use that cliche, if I could. One more question for you, Brian, and then I want to bring our other guests in. Your reporting, looking at the national audit, did find that those who needed specialty care waited a lot longer. What kind of specialty care are we talking about, Brian, and how much longer were those waits? Are we talking like mental health services, pain management? What kind of specialty care?
Well, the way
care?
It was explained to me from Tammy was is that it was ophthalmology or audiology. It was, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with the aging of the Vietnam veterans.
Sure.
But then there was the pain management. And, you know, my understanding of this is that combat medicine has gotten to the point where vets are probably surviving at higher rates now, coming back with different types of injuries. And pain management is a big part of what they have to deal with for the rest of their lives. And pain management as a specialty has evolved to a degree where there's more services available. So I think that that's probably where you're seeing it now is in pain care management is from those injuries.
Yeah. Well, and Brian, stay with us for a couple minutes if you could. I want to follow up with our guests, and then we definitely have listeners who want to jump in. I want to remind you, if you want to join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. I think to you, Colonel Loisel, first, the specialty care, pain management. I'm wondering if returning veterans who are in serious pain and, you know, they can't see somebody for even that 14 days, That's a long time to be in extreme pain. So even if Manchester is making the national goal of 14 days, 2 weeks is a long time to be in serious pain. I'm wondering if veterans are going to be self-medicating or, you know, what's there for them?
Absolutely. And I would say that, you know, if depending on the pain level, certainly that would be way too long. And I think that's where the VAs need to be working with, you know, their phone trees, triage nurses, et cetera, just to make sure that they get those people in on a more urgent basis. And I'm certain, you know, depending on which VA you're talking to, that's already happening, as well as if absolutely needed, using other local care as well, local hospitals, when you have to, in order to be able to make sure these people are seen on a more urgent basis.
Yeah. So, Tammy, let's say I'm a veteran and, you know, as Brian said, people are surviving war more than they used to, and that's good, but they're coming back with some really terrible health problems. So I'm in terrible pain. The VA can't see me for 14 days. I can't wait 14 days. What help is there for me?
So certainly we have many options for a veteran to seek care 24/7 if there's an urgent situation. And we have an urgent care. We always have their PACT team, which is their primary care provider, or their team associated with supporting them in any situation, and they can be referred to the pain management system as appropriate.
Outside the VA system? The pain management system outside the VA system within the VA?
We have a complex pain management program at the VA that also provides some alternative options related to providing the care that they may need, which also includes medications, injections, rehabilitation, many different options. And we've been very proud to even include such things as yoga and swimming. And so there's any options that veterans may want to seek. But I wanted to, if you don't mind, offer a little context to the data that was provided that maybe would be able to share with the audience really the expansiveness of the number of veterans in which we provide care, the exceptional service and quality of care that we provide, and the numbers that speak to the data. Here in New Hampshire, we are providing care for over 24,000 veterans this past year, and over 98% of those veterans received timely care based on the VA standards, which is exceptional. If we think about how we receive care anywhere, whether it's VA standards or not, these veterans, again, and I can define the differences between the retrospective definitions and prospective, but a veteran that was seeking care for a new appointment for primary care was receiving that appointment within 9 days or less.
And that's, again, the issue here, new people coming into the system.
Correct. And just to go a little bit further, for any type of specialty care, it was within 20 days or less. And for a mental health appointment, which obviously is very important as well, was a new appointment was 7 days or less. And again, if there's any urgent situation, they can always present to our urgent care 24/7. So those were the actual, that data actually represents what really happened, which is considered our retrospective data.
Howie, I did want to ask you too, and I know Colonel Loisel talked about this. How do you feel about sending veterans outside the VA system to Concord Hospital, Exeter Hospital, Lakes Region General, whatever, if immediate care is not available through the veteran system?
One of the two big problems here. One of them is going to be that the government, under HIPAA and under the Privacy Act of 1974, really limit the ability for any agency outside of the government to enter or acknowledge or even access any of their systems. So what you're going to find if you send these guys out to the civilian sector is that their doctors might make a diagnosis, not even knowing the details unless the veteran himself actually gets a copy and brings it to them so that they know, you know, what's being treated. At the same token, the outside doctor is going to have to bring that information back to the VA or they're not going to know.
So there's a communications problem.
Well, it's not a communications problem. I mean, we passed these acts, HIPAA and the Privacy Act, so that people's medical records couldn't be put on the internet and so forth. And basically, this is the internet with the VA system. It's a computerized system. It's limited in access. but it's still a computerized system that these outside doctors are not going to get access to.
Let's take some calls. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Jerry is calling in from Nashua. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a Vietnam vet, and I recently enrolled with the VA system. I have TRICARE, so I haven't needed any of the VA services, but I did enroll recently, and I came across a couple of things that were really mystifying to me. Number one, they requested a copy of my DD-214, which is the military discharge. And I said, well, can't you get that? And they said, no, we don't have access to those, which to me was just mind-boggling. I simultaneously registered with Manchester and also with Bedford, Mass. And while I was registering with Bedford, Mass., I said, well, can't you get my information from another facility? And they said, no, we don't have the ability to access any of that. And today, in today's days of central databases for agencies like this, it was really mind-boggling that they couldn't access any of this other information. And then I have one other comment, and then I'll listen off the air. The recent scandal of the people who were hiding the individuals who were a number of days overdue for what the VA set up as their standard, although I believe that was totally wrong, but the news media seems to indicate that the result of these people waiting was these people hiding. If they had taken this out of the mix, those people would have been waiting that long anyway. And I believe that the VA is underfunded and understaffed, and it comes right down to Congress that they will not allocate the amount of funds needed to take care of our veterans.
And, Jerry, and we talked about that. I'm glad you raised that. Can I ask you a quick question, Jerry? You said you're a Vietnam vet, so, left combat a long time ago, but just recently enrolled. How come?
Well, I had a very bad experience in Manchester a long time ago, right after sometime in the early 80s, I believe. And at the time, I was seen by a physician there that did not understand English and who saw me for about 10 minutes. And
wow.
I just, and believe me, things have changed because I have seen a physician in Bedford, Mass. And I have to say that the experience that I've had at that facility so far has been fabulous. The physician spent an hour and 15 minutes with me, which if you try to do that on the outside now, you're never going to have that happen.
Okay. Jerry, thanks a lot for calling in. Here's an email that came in from Oliver in Concord earlier today. This gets to something that Jerry, our caller, raised too, and that's the lack of a full-service VA hospital here in New Hampshire. We're the only state, right, Colonel Loisel, who doesn't have that status. So here's Oliver's comment. He says, fund and staff the Manchester VA hospital to be a full-service hospital. By the way, he says he's used Manchester for the past 3 years and has been extremely happy with the service provided. Oliver says this should be a priority of the legislators. The number of Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans who will need services in the future will be very significant. If not that option, then veterans must be given free access to health care services the VA is in short supply of. Sending veterans down to Boston or over to White River Junction is not a very efficient or caring alternative. So two things to dig into here. And Tammy, I'd like to ask you first, but everybody, how does the fact that the VA center that you run is not a full-fledged hospital, what does that mean on the ground? Does that mean I can get, you know, this type of help with my bad knee but not full surgery? Or what does that mean exactly?
There are particular types of complexity levels that the VA categorizes each medical center. We are a complexity level 3, and that identifies the particular types of services that we provide, including inpatient beds, and also intensive care unit, et cetera. And in order to do that, to have a safe level of care, you would need to ensure that you are able to provide those services 24/7. You are able to maintain those services with veterans in the beds, and that you're able to turn over those beds on a regular basis. In the late 90s, there was a decision that was made to close the inpatient beds at Manchester because we could not keep those beds full. When we were not able to have the high quality of care to maintain all of the services necessary, including an intensive care unit, et cetera, because of the census. The census was too low here.
There just weren't enough veterans who needed care.
Correct, for that high level of care. Hence the reason for closing of those services. We have moved to contracting those types of care at the Concord Hospital, which has provided an exceptional relationship for the VA at Manchester to support the acute admissions and has been working well since.
Yeah, and Brian, a question for you. I know you looked at this in your reporting. How does the fact that New Hampshire is the only state without this full-fledged VA hospital that Tammy describes, how does that affect this whole picture of veterans' health care in the Granite State?
Well, you know, they provide less care.
And people have to go elsewhere.
Right, and they have to go elsewhere. And I don't know to the extent that this influx of veterans would have any, or I mean, certainly the demand on services is a lot higher than it used to be, in the 90s especially. So, I mean, and whether or not that has anything to do with the ability to get a full-service hospital here, I know that our legislators have been working towards that. They've been arguing for it. Whether or not it has any legs to actually happen is not for me to say. But
so Gene Shaheen and Kelly Ayotte and our members of Congress are pushing for.
Well, they argue that we want one, and that when they speak to veterans groups and when they speak on the stump, they do say that this is what we need. I mean, all legislators are in favor of the best services that can be provided for veterans. The reality of the situation is different, of course.
Yeah, and Brian, just real quickly, from what I understand, too, some of our lawmakers are pushing for what our emailer calls for, free access to health care services outside the system.
Correct.
Making that a little bit easier.
I think Senator Shaheen and, they've all talked about this, and this all certainly came out of some of the audit findings, is that this was a recommendation. So at least they're on the same page with the recommendations, is that the legislators would like to see veterans be able to access care outside of the system if they can't get it in a timely way inside of it.
Okay. Brian, thanks for helping us out this morning. We really appreciate it. That's Brian Walston, NHPR's digital reporter. Again, you can find links to Brian's recent reporting about the VA in New Hampshire on our webpage, nhpr.org/exchange. Coming up in just a moment, more of your comments, questions, emails, and so forth. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Supreme Court decisions on the limits of religious freedom and the power of public unions. Then for this month's Environmental Outlook, how meat consumption affects the planet. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from your listeners and from Popolo in Bellows Falls, presenting an all-you-can-eat barbecue dinner with music from the Milk House Heaters and the Meteor Shades on Friday, the 4th of July. PopoloMeansPeople.com. And Lutheran Social Services Good News Garage, accepting, repairing, and providing reliable vehicles to families in need. And donate a car, change a life at GoodNewsGarage.org. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll speak with the author of a new book called Cubed, A History of the Office. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today in The Exchange, the Department of Veterans Affairs and Veterans Healthcare nationally and in the Granite State, where we go from here after the scandal that erupted this past spring. You can join us with your thoughts. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. all one word. You can continue the conversation there. Our guests in studio, Tammy Krueger, director of the Manchester VA Medical Center. She's been in that position for a couple months. Paul Loisel is here, a colonel, deputy chief of the joint staff of the New Hampshire National Guard, and Howie Howe, a veterans service officer who works with the Manchester VA and State Veterans Advisory Committee. He is a Vietnam vet. Colonel Loisel, by the way, served in Afghanistan. One more time, that number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. Wendy is in Concord. Hi, Wendy. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to express my appreciation for the VA in New Hampshire and Vermont and Massachusetts. I'm a veteran, and I've been served by the system for 20 years now. And I actually had the chance to go back into getting some civilian health care for a couple of years. And it didn't compare to the services I received at the VA, so I decided to go back to the VA to get services. And, I mean, they're just wonderful. I mean, I've had providers call me after hours because they didn't have time in their workday to give me a call back. They just go above and beyond.
So not very happy with the VA system and not that excited, Wendy, about the idea of seeking care outside if the VA can't provide it.
Right, yeah. I mean, I just, one of your panelists said that, you know, they expressed the thought that the VA offered specialized care that civilian doctors don't necessarily understand certain things that veterans have been through, and especially PTSD. And I think that that's very true, and I think that the veteran population is a special population, and the VA does a good job at targeting that and understanding better the issues that we have as veterans.
Well, Tammy, if I could keep you on for just a minute longer. It's interesting that you called as a female veteran because the Associated Press a little while back looked at the rising needs of female veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, especially those of childbearing age, and found services for female vets lacking, found that in many instances there was not a designated women's health provider, and that women of childbearing age, in fact, were sometimes given medications that could cause birth defects. I just wonder what you think about the attention to female veterans, given your unique perspective.
Well, I actually have experienced prenatal care through the VA. I had twins, a very high-risk pregnancy.
Wow.
And they gave me the opportunity to go out to specialists in the civilian healthcare system. And I was very pleased with how they handled that. You know, they, as soon as they found out I was pregnant, they, you know, through fee basis, paid for my care outside the VA. And have my twins were born at 28 weeks up at Dartmouth. I can't even calculate what that must have cost. And the VA, you know, paid for that for me. They also have a women's clinic at the Manchester VA and a women's clinic or women's center at the White River Junction VA.
Okay.
And I've used both of those.
And Wendy, you're starting to break up there, so I'll jump in on you. But Tammy, do you want to jump in very quickly there? There was this look at women's services at VA healthcare facilities around the country.
So the VA has worked diligently to focus not only on the care for men, which has traditionally been the focus for VA, but really looking at the services that women need specifically. Right now at Manchester, we have recognized that over 6% of the veterans that we serve are women. And that we also see that women veterans tend to be much younger than their male counterparts that are seeking services. And so we have identified specific programs for not only their clinical aspects, but wellness programs, and provide those services for during regular hours, during extended hour and weekend services. Wendy spoke about the services that were provided for non-VA care in order for her to have her twins, which we certainly do on a regular basis as appropriate. and those have also been very popular. We, when we're bringing open our operating room in 3 weeks, we do have gynecological services that we'll be offering at a later date with the OR opening as well. So we're looking forward to that.
So they're not gynecological services are not there now?
There is a gynecology services, but that will be connected with our operating room. So procedure-type things for female care.
Got it. Okay, Wendy, thank you for calling in. Here's an email from Brian in Bedford. And Colonel Wazell, I'm going to throw this to you first, I think. Brian says, whenever I hear these news pieces about funding problems at the VA, I can't help but think, shouldn't we be looking at a more fundamental problem, i.e. the excessively overly generous package of benefits that are bestowed upon anyone who does a 4-year stint in our military? Brian says, why should someone who has an administrative job on a base in Kansas, far from any combat situation, be entitled to a lifetime of free health care? Brian says, my father is a great example. I love him dearly. This is not meant to disparage his service to the country in any way, but he served for 4 years during peacetime duty in the 50s. He's 82 years old and has received health care worth hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars from the VA over the years. Brian says he's glad it helped him personally, but it's expensive. What do you think? Brian says, would it make more sense to differentiate between combat-related injuries and more routine health care for a peacetime soldier?
Great question. Thank you. And I'm not the benefits guy. So I would say, though, that I am sure, though, that in a lot of instances, if somebody does serve in peacetime, it doesn't automatically qualify you for VA benefits for a lifetime. And please correct me if I'm wrong. So I'm getting some nods here in the audience here. But if somebody has served their country, they've gone to war, certainly, I think we would all agree, then they put their life on the line to serve our country, then they deserve a certain level then of care to make sure that they come back whole and that we do whatever is in our power to make sure that they and their families then are taken care of as we move forward, especially if they got some kind of battle-related injury in a war situation.
Sure. So, Howie, we talked earlier about, you know, people coming back with very bad injuries or brain injuries or PTSD. What do you think about Brian's point that if someone was at a desk for 4 years in the 1950s, do they deserve a lifetime of free care?
Well, first of all, anybody who joins the military is at the whims of the government as to where they go. They don't get to choose whether they're in a combat zone. And just because we declared that we were in peacetime doesn't mean that none of these people were put in harm's way. What about those Marines who serve at embassies around the world that have been attacked during peacetime? What about the guys, the special advisors sent to the Philippines to fight the Hux and whatever the new name is of the communist movement down there and Muslim movement down there? So, I mean, to say that they're not entitled to it. Well, let me put it this way. Every veteran has signed a contract with the government willing to put his life on the line wherever the government sends him. And for 1% of the population to have done that and say that they are no better than the other 99%, I'm sorry, I'm going to object to that one strongly.
So disagreeing with Brian there, well, that if you sign up, that's the benefit that you should get.
You should, you know, there's a difference between being entitled because you were born here and actually putting your line on your life on the line for the country.
I want to ask you another question. We talked earlier when my colleague Brian Walston was here about what I said was the lack of a full-service VA hospital here in New Hampshire. And then during the break, there was some disagreement, and you guys said, well, that's not exactly the case. Can you clear that up? Maybe you, Tammy, when we say there isn't a full-service veterans hospital here in New Hampshire. Again, is there or isn't there? How is New Hampshire different from other states?
Well, let me speak about healthcare in general. And healthcare is certainly moving to being more outpatient versus inpatient. And so as we look at the needs of veterans for today and into the future, we are building those programs that will assist veterans here closer to their homes versus further. We are identifying those services that are needed and the projected needs for the future. And so those are certainly outpatient same-day programs. So our operating room, as I had mentioned, is opening. That will be for same-day surgery, in and out on the same day. All of our programs are outpatient programs, just like you'll see in the private sector, more outpatient programs. For those limited services that are inpatient,
will you stay in the hospital for a couple days?
Absolutely. Yeah. Those are the things that we are supporting through non-VA fee-based care. And but when you look at strategically any other community-based hospitals that are organizing their strategies, they are looking at more outpatient programs versus inpatient traditionally.
So when someone needs that a week or two in the hospital after a major injury or a major surgery, you said non-fee-based.
Correct.
Does that mean sending them to, an outside hospital?
Sure. So for a very short example, again, I had mentioned that we have a contract with Concord Hospital. And we certainly will, as appropriate and deemed necessary, we will admit a veteran to Concord Hospital for an overnight stay, if two or three, if it's necessary, for an acute admission, for a surgical intervention, et cetera. But when they get to Concord, traditionally, those long overnight stays, years back, now have really been shortened. And that's due to new technologies in healthcare of today.
Yeah, that's a change that we've seen in healthcare in general. I know you want to jump in on this issue too, Howie.
Oh, yeah. First thing we have to do is end the ultimate lie that New Hampshire is the only state in the union without a full-service hospital.
I've heard politicians say that so many times.
Well, yeah, because politicians are trying to buy your vote. And, they're going to tell you what you want to hear. And, the bottom line is 90% of all patients who seek services at VAMC Manchester are there for clinical services. So, the only question really remains is why are so many sent out of state? Well, it's because they don't have either the facility, the equipment, or the staffing to hand it within a timely basis. And let's not forget that when we started this whole thing after the Walter Reed scandal and everything else, and people still can't decide what the difference is between DOD and VA. This came down to, these people need immediate care and do it within a certain time frame and everything else. Well, if you call up the VA and you need an appointment for a service at Manchester and they don't have it readily available, then they might need to schedule to send you to Boston. We sent 2,475 people to Boston last year.
In New Hampshire?
In New Hampshire. 452 of them were for orthopedic services, 303 for ophthalmology. And this is from Tammy's staff that I got these statistics, and she was very happy. But on this full-service issue, let me put it this way. Define a full-service hospital, because if a full-service hospital means a hospital could take in and handle anything and everything, there isn't a full-service hospital in the state of New Hampshire, period, civilian or VA, because if we did, we wouldn't have to med-flight people to Boston. So, please stop that. The other thing is they say, we're the only state without one. Well, Hawaii doesn't have one. Alaska doesn't have one.
By the way, Hawaii had, I think, the highest wait times in this national.
Yeah. Audit. Now, here's the irony. What Hawaii and Alaska have is they only have CBOCs, which is community-based outpatient clinics, but they don't have VA hospitals. If it needed hospital care, they have to go to the active duty base in the area and wait behind the active duty servicemen to get the care.
Yeah, because there's two separate systems. One's
right.
For active duty, Walter Reed and so forth, and the other is the VA system for veterans.
Correct.
Let's take one more call if we could, and this is Kevin in Moultonboro. Hi, Kevin. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I served as a combat intelligence team leader in Desert Storm, and I came back and never really looked at VA services, but a friend, an Army buddy, actually said, go in and get on registered on a registry of Desert Storm veterans. Just, get your problems marked down because someday you might be old, and someday these complaints might turn serious. So I went to Manchester, and I was seen by two doctors. The first doctor hardly spoke to me, reeked of cigarettes, and kind of got me in and out of there. And I think there were like 16 different things, symptoms that I wanted to be checked for. I checked range of motion in one knee and walked out, didn't say anything to me. But there was a nice counselor there, and he brought me to this other doctor. This doctor was a specialist in Gulf War syndrome, very nice man. He was very frustrated, though, and he encouraged me to put in for disability, for Gulf War syndrome. And I think there were 14 or 15 different symptoms that we put in for, including PTSD. And I wasn't looking for disability, and frankly, I don't want it. But
and Kevin, this was at the VA, you're saying, were you?
The VA in Manchester,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, sure.
And then when they came back, they actually did give me 10% disability, but in the one symptom that was not Desert Storm related, it was the knee issue, None of the Gulf War Syndrome stuff did they come back. And I still suffer from those symptoms to this day.
Yeah,
and
Kevin,
still struggle with.
Yeah, thank you for calling in. I'm sorry to jump in on you, but I do want to give the folks here a chance to talk about what happened. I wonder, maybe to you, Tammy, you know, when you give someone care at the VA, do you say, well, this problem isn't related to your service, so we're not going to help you with this one, but this problem is related to your service, so we'll help you with that one? I mean, do you truncate it like that? Do you cut it up like that, or you just treat the whole person?
Well, certainly our job is to treat the whole person. We also will offer advice if we recognize that there's an opportunity to connect with a potential submission for benefits as well, which it sounds like this gentleman had some advocacy going on and connection with VBA as well.
Well, and Kevin, I'm sorry to hear about your struggles. And Paul Loisel, I was talking to a veteran who I know just the other day. He said some veterans struggle with this whole VA system because they get out, they get their VA briefing about, you know, what's available. And, you know, they just, there's so much information there.
It's information overload.
It's information overload. They're just coming back from war or whatever, and they just don't get it. It's too much all at once. I mean, I wonder what you think about that. This is a VA. Do we need to do a better job just explaining to people, this is what's here for you, this is what you can access, and so forth?
I would agree with you. That's going to be probably one of the biggest pieces of what we have to work on is how do we integrate their care? How do we get the right care for the right time for that person and get them to the right service levels? And there's a lot of usually available resources for our veterans. They may not know that it's there, and that's one of the biggest problems.
Yeah, information overload and a lot of medical terminology and so forth. And
correct.
We all know what it's like to look through those insurance, you know, when we're applying for our private
exactly.
health insurance. It's confusing. All right. All of you, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it. Tammy, thank you. It was good to meet you.
Thank you.
That's Tammy Krueger, director of the Manchester VA Medical Center. She's been in that position since March. Howie Howe, it was good to have you. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Howie Howe, a Veterans Service Officer who works to advise the Veterans Advisory Committee for the state. He's a Vietnam vet himself. And Colonel Paul Loisel, it was good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you again, Laura.
Colonel Paul Loisel, Mission Support Group Commander at the Pease Air National Guard. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our intern is James Pouliot. Theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, Cubed, a secret history of the workplace. A new book looks at how that place where we spend countless hours a week has changed over time, from the Dickensian counting houses of the past to the cubicle farms of today to a future of telecommuting. The author says as great cultural and economic shifts have occurred, the workplace has evolved along with them. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and Littleton Regional Healthcare's Dr. Moose Golf Tournament, September 12th at Omni Mount Washington Resort, to benefit the LRH Paramedic Intercept Program, littletonhealthcare.org. And Farnham Hill Cider is now offering summer cider with a fruity character and brighter flavor for summer dining and entertainment, featured in selected Hannaford's, Portsmouth Brewery, and Fiddlehead Farm Markets.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Collybrook, 90.3.
WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled that some for-profit companies do not have to include birth control for women in their company health plans, as mandated by the Affordable Care Act. Closely held for-profit companies can be exempted.